Feeney.
I'm Clancy.
And I'm Damien.
Now you might be asking, what do two Aussies and a Pom have in common?
Quite a lot, actually.
For starters, Her Majesty has her face on all our currencies.
Even the coins.
There's a great Union Jack floating around some flags as well.
And we speak the same language, sort of.
Somehow.
Allegedly.
And we love winding each other up.
What are we doing here then?
Winding you up. But anyway, on this show, we discuss current Australian politics.
We take a look at past events.
While on a mission to ensure the Governor General stays in their job.
What? I didn't sign up for this. What?
It's in the show's name, Phoebe. Welcome to Let's Save the Governor General.
No, I don't want to. Kick him out.
What about her?
Or her. No, let's just not have a Governor General. Let's have a republic.
With who is president?
Not ScoMo.
President ScoMo. President ScoMo.
No, President Julia Gillard.
President Craig Kelly. Hello, good morning from this side of the world and good evening from the other side of the world. Welcome to a heatwave edition of Let's Save the Governor General. Because
heatwave where you are, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It's really fucking hot, right, Clance?
It is quite warm, yes. But mind you, Phoebe is her own heatwave. She's the hottest thing in the room.
Phoebe is what we might call a heat magnet. There you go. All the pro wrestling fans will get that term.
See, I'm just that good. I'm just that good.
We just need to bask in her glorious warmth.
That means that I'm now a heel.
A what?
See, we got me as the heel, Clancy as the mark. Does that make Damien the face?
I'm the white meat baby face of the three of us.
Susan, I don't understand what they are for.
I love watching Clancy's expression. Like, it's a shame that this is an audio only format because Clancy's expression right now is gold.
It's
Here's some gold for you. Speaking of which,
it's a doggo.
Is Isabella.
This is Jasper.
They're close.
That's Jasper. Say hello, Jasper.
Jasper,
speak. Speak.
There you go. All right, that's the special Let's Save the Governor General doggo.
Yay!
Clancy, how's life on the Apple Isle?
Hot. Look, it's pretty good at the moment. Apart from the fact that it's hot and there's bushfires, and in fact, just up the road from me late last night, evidently, there was a car on fire.
Oh.
So I'm just watching helicopters actually going overhead waterbombing somewhere. But having said that, it just started to rain.
Jeez, okay. Everything. And on top of that, you've got an election as well.
So that's right. So Jeremy Rockliffe, our current incumbent premier, has made the decision to call an election a whole year early. We weren't actually due to have the election until next year, but he's made that decision. And so that's going to be, I believe, on the 23rd of March. So it's only a couple of weeks away. And the interesting thing about this election, apart from it being a year early, is that at this election, we're going to be increasing the number of seats in our state parliament from 25 to 35.
Yep.
Which means that obviously there's more seats up for grabs. It also means that there's a lot of new candidates, independent candidates, and other unaffiliated parties who are fielding candidates. So it'll be quite an interesting thing to watch, I believe. Jackie Lambie's network is fielding quite a few candidates.
Yeah, that's no surprise. And I think she will do well. I think she's got that local appeal. Yes,
she does. And then there's also a few independents, which I was quite interested because looking around, you're seeing all these posters going up and there's quite a lot of teal in brackets candidates who are actually using teal on their posters, which I thought was quite funny. And then we've got, I guess, in the Labor Party, there's been a lot of unrest. David Byrne, unfortunately, resigned from the Labor Party and he's running as an independent and he was a former leader of the Labor Party. We've got Erica Betts is making another tilt.
Oh, God.
As well. So Erica Betts is back. Whether he'll be voted back in is another matter. what one of the things that kicked this off was that there were several members of the Liberal Party who have resigned or been asked to resign on the back of things that the Liberal Party was doing that they didn't agree with, one of which is the stadium. Didn't like the way that the Rockcliffe government was going about doing that, which means that they're now running as independents as well. So
it's essentially an election free-for-all.
It's an election free-for-all.
Would you say, anarchy democracy?
Well, in a way, it's sort of it. It's like I'm not agreeing with my party's line, so I'm going to resign from the party and then I'm going to run by myself against my own party.
That happens all the time, so it's no...
Yeah.
But I think with the extra seats, it was a little bit like the, I think, 2016, 2017, I forget which year it was, the election, the double dissolution that Malcolm Turnbull called, where every man and his dog ran for the Senate. Speaking
and
of
we ended up with every man and his dog, in some cases, getting elected to the Senate. The sports party, the motorists.
Yes. Speaking of elections, Phoebe, your side of the world, you just had Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday and the State of the Union. How was your first Super Tuesday, Phoebes?
Predictable.
Yep,
I agree. My state is never a Super Tuesday state. It's always a pre-Super Tuesday state. So it went to the polls officially a week before Super Tuesday. And the predicted candidates won the primaries in both parties.
Yep. I thought
because you're mostly in a Democrat area, aren't you?
This is a purple state. In the 2016 election, this was the closest state in the whole of America.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
State where I am in by less than 10,000 votes.
Jeez, that's pretty
close. In 2016. Yeah. And then it turned and flipped to Joe Biden in 2020, where he won it by about 110,000 votes, which for a population of this state, which is of about 5 million, that ain't that many.
No. So, Clance, if you mix red and blue together, you get purple, apparently.
I do get that now. Okay. Mean something slightly different here in Australia.
Which we may get to a little bit later on as well.
Be the rainbow state.
Super Tuesday did show that Donald Trump's not as strong as he thinks he is, because he lost the state of Vermont and he was 30 points up at a poll that was taken a couple of weeks before that. He was supposed to sweep all of the states, but he didn't take them on.
And yet Nikki Haley resigned from the race.
She dropped out of the race, And so did Dean Phillips, the only serious challenger left.
The
only serious challenger to Joe Biden dropped out of the Democratic race, so Dean Phillips dropped out as well. And Marianne Williamson resuspended her campaign. Marianne Williamson, after the New Hampshire primary, suspended her campaign, and then before the Michigan primary, unsuspended her campaign, and then after Super Tuesday, resuspended her campaign. It's like, you did also ask about the State of the Union, and that was a very fiery speech by an octogenarian. He did very, very well. He was very combative, very fiery, and he was not afraid to say, okay, come and get me. He was okay. He was also quite vocal in what he wanted to achieve. He made a partisan political attack on the Supreme Court, for example, which was unexpected.
That's engaged... never been done before.
Well, not during State of the Union.
I remember Obama had a dig at the Supreme Court during one of his SOTUs, and that went down like a red balloon. And
but it was what his base wanted to hear. It was all of it was all of the love points that his base wanted to hear, and it was. It was a very, very good speech from an octogenarian who people have said was a doddery old fart.
Maybe the drugs are kicking in. But anyway, speaking of doddery
old farts. As they say, Kamala made sure he got his full dose that day. And he had his Weetabix.
He had his Marmite. As
yeah, his Weetabix and his Marmite and all the principal stuff. But yes.
Well, look, speaking of Weetabix and Marmite, it's a great segue to supermarkets. Now, a couple of weeks before, I reckon we should almost have like a weekly episode, because things just keep happening. Not long after we recorded last time, the ABC put out a Four Corners special about the power of Coles and Woolworths and how they maintain their duopoly over the Australian supermarket scene. So essentially, the accusation was that Coles and Woolworths engage in anti-competitive practices, and
No.
that they essentially collude to keep prices, you know, as they would like them. There's not really much competition, but probably the more disturbing aspects was how they treat suppliers as well, and the fees that they charge suppliers and buyers and like the farmers to stock their products. And the type of commercial retribution happens if you speak up against the duopoly. So on the screen here, so there are like nine talking points. So market concentration is in any given suburb, there's at least one or two Coles or Woolies. I know around my part of the world, there's like three of each we could easily go to. Specials that aren't really specials because they're a bit like jewelers in that they inflate the price to say that they're giving you a discount. Price matching, which isn't really price matching, or they collude on the price. Mm-hmm. Price negotiations, where they squeeze the supplier. This one was interesting. Phantom brands. I don't know if either of you two watched.
I know what a phantom brand is.
Yes,
they were a big thing in the UK. Phantom brands were Tesco's in Britain. Oh, okay. One of the largest supermarkets in Britain were accused of making up a load of farms where they had the same product, but it was like coming from a Happy Valley farm, Wiltshire Hills farm, Hillside farm. None of them existed.
Yeah, and this is the same
thing. They were just marketing inventions.
And then squeezing farmers, this is probably the other disturbing part as well, was that they had a couple of farm or one or two farmers on the special who were about to shut up shop completely because Coles and Woolworths had this habit of driving your prices down so that you barely made a profit.
The other thing that really did disturb me, though, was land banking, because Australia has the worst housing crisis going, and you've got Coles and Woolworths just sitting there going, we're going to make money. Land banking is something which is on the verge of being made unlawful in the UK because Tesco, Sainsbury's, Walmart, Asda, Waitrose and Morrison, so the big five supermarkets in the UK, they would buy up large swaths of land, obtain planning permission on it, and then do nothing with it. Okay. They would go through the process of obtaining planning permission. Go, oh, no, we're not land banking. But then they wouldn't do anything with the land. The planning permission would expire. It would have appreciated by 1,000%. And then they flog it on to some developer that they've set up.
Yes, that's and look, I remember this interesting, like a number of years ago when Woolworths tried to get into the home hardware business as a rival to Bunnings, they brought up, they spent large on, big parcels of land in order to build their own hardware stores to compete with Bunnings. And it's quite an interesting scenario there as well. So there were two.
The thing that does get me, though, is that there are some competitors that are trying to give it a go.
Yes, Aldi, for example.
Aldi, Lidl, they are trying to give it a go. I think that these two are trying their desperateness, their damnedest, to say, we don't want these German discount supermarkets to do what they've done in Europe and in North America. Because in North America here, particularly in the Midwest where I am, the German discounters are typically 30 to 50% cheaper.
Yeah.
So one of the things is that there was a 60 Minutes, which is like, I think it was ABC 60 Minutes, which is like their big news report on just how much cheaper these brands are.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're explosive as the other brands.
I say I shop at Aldi myself, and in a lot of aspects, it is noticeably cheaper. And it's like, well,
is also uniform. If you walk into an Aldi anywhere in the world, the layout will be exactly the same.
Yes, exactly. Which is handy.
Unfortunately, however, we don't have Aldi in Tasmania.
You don't have space for them. You don't have enough.
The population's not high enough. So we don't have Aldi and we don't have IKEA. And there's a couple of others.
Or Costco.
But we don't have Costco. We don't have any of those because our population's not high enough. So I don't think you have to have a minimum population of over 1 million people before they'll come and join the party.
But the thing that got me about when I walked into an Aldi for the first time here was that the brands were the same as well. the brands were uniform. Yeah. So their meat brands, their fruit brands, their salad brands, they were uniform, which leads me to believe that Aldi and Lidl have gone global in their supply chain.
Quite possible.
The whole world with the same suppliers.
Which is
how they can get around these practices by Coles and Woolworths.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to say, there were two takeaways from this position.
Rod Sims, the former head of the ACCC, that we have one of the most concentrated supermarkets in the world. Is he lying?
It's not true.
His words are that
by the way.
I don't think you would impugn his integrity and his understanding of competition law.
I'm just saying the world has got much more competitive.
He retired 18 months ago. He's not...
Okay, can we take that out? Is that okay?
No.
He is retired, but I shouldn't have said that, Angus. Are we going to leave it in there if we are?
Well, I mean, if we're on the record. You said it. I mean, you know, let's move on, but... Yeah.
Yeah. No. I think I'm done, guys. I do this with good intent. You know, I don't do this with bad intent.
You're walking out, really?
No. Can we just talk to Brad for a second?
Let me just have a minute.
Oh, the poor guy, like, you know, tried to pour shit on, you know, the guy who's criticizing him, and he got called out, and it's like, oh, look, I need a minute with my advisors. And I love that hand on his shoulder. It's like, yeah, mate, can we have a minute with Brad? It's like, what the actual fuck, guys? Come on.
I mean, is this the mafia?
Well, and
is
then
this
there
the
was
Woolworths mafia? The Woolworths mafia.
Sorry, I'll get to this other point as well. So let me just play this part as well.
In Coles, and you spend $100, you'd be a few cents difference, maybe, depending on the specials.
The fact there's little difference on price is something even Coles CEO Leah Weckert concedes.
You do price match with Woolworths, do you?
We certainly have, as one of our considerations when we set price, is what is the price of the other retailers, not just Woolworths, but all other retailers.
Are you familiar with the term Colesworth?
I'm not.
Bullshit.
Colesworth. But here's the thing, though. It's funny hearing us talk about Woolworths, because in 2008, Woolworths in the UK crashed and burned.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they were part of the same family, but they weren't a grocery shop. They were like a bric-a-brac shop.
Oh, okay.
Like a sweet shop, bric-a-brac shop. You could walk into a Woolworths and you could buy any individual screw of any individual size.
Okay.
Go and buy one screw. Just buy one screw if you really wanted. Of any individual size if you needed it.
Great.
They were famous in the UK for selling school uniforms, so everyone would go to Woolies to get their school uniforms.
Oh, Woolies. Well, because it's a different Woolies. It's not the same.
Were part of the same family.
Oh, okay.
Because they had the same branding and everything.
They were. I thought they were a separate
Well, I invite our viewers to send us an email and fact check me if I am correct or if I'm incorrect.
Well, the reason I say that is that I would have thought it was too, but I am a member of a group on Facebook called the Dull Men's Club, and they recently had a debate on there just a couple of weeks ago about Woolworths and whether or not it's the same organisation as in the UK as it is in Australia. And I think quite a few people said no, it was a completely different group that just happened to have the same name.
Mm-hmm. Yep, look. All right, we'll see if the fact check has come through. But yeah, it's interesting. So like having watched that, I actually now do a lot more shopping at the greengrocers instead, you know, instead of getting fruit and veg from Coles and Woolworths. Yeah, I've been spending a bit more at Aldi and at the greengrocers.
Look, we as I said before, we have definitely the duopoly here. Mm-hmm. We do have IGA though.
Yep.
So but there's an IGA just down the street from me, but it's quite small, so I don't go there very often. The Woolworths is the easiest to go to, but we often get our fruit and veggies from the markets, the farmers' markets.
Yeah.
So I prefer to go to them. It's not always possible, you know, it's just easy to duck into whatever. And, of course, there's certain brands you can't get, I guess. I'm very much I try not to eat or try not to purchase a lot of...
You try not to eat, full stop?
Well, I try not to purchase a lot of packaged food or, you know, that sort of lots of plastic and pre-prepared stuff. But, you know, sometimes you can't help it. You have to, especially when you've got animals.
Are you referring to the people that you date as animals?
No, I'm referring to my furry friends.
You're referring to, the Governor General Golden Doggy.
Yes, particularly the cats. And the dogs not so much because they get fed a very special gourmet sausage.
La-di-da.
La-di-da.
Clancy's dogs and the gourmet sausage.
Clancy's dogs are the big cheese, aren't they?
Oh, they're very cute. They're cute enough to earn their gourmet.
They are. They get a lot of love. They were featured on the Facebook page of the local market recently because...
They're celebrity doggos.
They're celebrity doggos, they are, yeah. But, yes, the cats are mostly
this
the ones
that... now lost all of our audience.
I know. We're talking about Clancy's animals. There is definitely that happening in Tassie.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a lot of choices. I mentioned there's a lot of those companies that won't come to Tassie because we don't have enough of a population, which means that the existing ones have a larger market share, which is sort of a bit ironic, really.
Yeah. One of the problems with the Colesworth duopoly was that they're saying that they're charging more because the costs that they incur have gone up, but the problem is so have their profits. And they're saying that their profits have gone up. Their profits have gone up because of the costs they're incurring. But if the costs they're incurring gone up, then their profit should go down or at least stay the same. But no, their profits have actually increased.
Pension funds will be loving that. Pension funds will be loving that.
This chick will be loving that. But it's
the Albanese Treasury will be loving that too.
Well, let's see what happens. And look, the only real way to stop the duopoly is by voting with your wallet, voting with your feet.
Yes. I would strongly suggest that anybody that has near them one of the German discount retailers to go there because you will save money.
I loved Aldi when I lived in Sydney. That's where I used to shop most of the time. And in fact, when we moved to Tasmania, we did a massive shop at Aldi and sent it with the rest of our belongings to the island, and we were still using food up over a year later we bought at Aldi. We did about $400. We did a massive shop with about six boxes full of food.
If you're spending $400 an hour, you are buying a lot.
Yeah, I know. That's quite.
No, that's what I'm saying. Considering that the food lasted us over a year, so, you know, that was all, obviously, you know, stuff that was going to last us a long time, like pasta and tin food and things like that.
The non-perishables.
Let's move on. This also made news in the last couple of weeks as well. Bo Lamar Condon's alleged murder of Jesse Baird and Luke Davis. So this gentleman on the left, Bo Lamar Condon, was in a relationship with Jesse Baird, this guy in the middle. And so... this guy on the left has been arrested and charged with the murders of these two people. So this guy on the right is the new partner of this guy in the middle, and that set off a storm of criticism of the New South Wales Police, partly because this gentleman here on the left, Bo Lamar Condon, was an active policeman who allegedly murdered these two people with his service gun.
Oh, how wonderful.
And then went to extraordinary lengths to cover up the murders, and there was a manhunt for a few days.
And then he handed himself in.
Yes, he eventually handed himself in.
Did he get bored of being on the run?
I don't know. It's just in this day and age, it's very hard to stay on the run for a very long period of time when there's so much known about you. As well, but Now, this is the problem with impending court cases, is that the media will reveal a lot about the person before the case goes to trial. So I'm a little bit hesitant to discuss the personal particulars, but the talk is that Beaulamar Condon had a very, he portrayed himself as having a very lavish lifestyle, and he got to meet lots of celebrities and all this kind of stuff.
From my understanding is that he portrayed himself to be a lot more connected than he was.
Yes, exactly.
He sounds like he was a bit of a, from what the news have been saying, he sounds like he's got some definite mental health issues. There was some stalking type behavior and maybe some, you know, narcissistic type of things going on there as well.
Yeah.
So I think there were some questions on whether or not he was actually had some psychiatric issues, were evident even before this happened, where he was telling other police officers about having all these famous friends and things like that. Yeah.
But then that raises the question. Let's assume that this is true, and like neither of us are going to be on a jury, assuming he does plead not guilty. How the hell did he become a serving member? How the hell did he stay a serving member who got to carry his service gun with him?
And I think that is actually the question that the police are asking themselves.
Well, I'm going to get quite personal here. It does remind me of a case in Britain where a friend of mine was murdered by somebody who should have been better treated by the mental health system. So a friend of mine, he was a cycling friend of mine, and he was murdered in a road rage incident.
Oh.
He was stabbed 80 times by this gentleman. Yeah, so he was stabbed 80 times by the guy, and he went on the run, and he was found hiding in some bunker at a golf course. But the inquest into the death was just how failed he had been by the mental health system, because they have misdiagnosed him with autism when it was paranoid schizophrenia. So whilst we can say, yes, he should have been getting treatment and stuff, we are dark ages still when it comes to identifying and taking seriously these issues in some cases.
Well, but however, having said that, I think we're a lot better than the dark ages where you had asylums and the kind of bad shit that happened in there. So I think we've, you know,
we've moved away to care in the community, which is an awful lot better than what we did have, which was lock up your, excuse my language here, lock up your lunatics in Bedlam.
Yes, literally Bedlam.
That is what they called it. That is what it was. It was Bedlam. Yes. And on the British census, you had to state whether your residence was a lunatic, imbecile, or idiocy asylum.
Yeah, that's so. I think what better mental health treatment? But yeah, just, I suppose these details will come out, and maybe the force will come under some scrutiny about how they screen people, both at application and also ongoing. The other thing that the New South Wales Police copped criticism for was the Karen Webb quoting Taylor Swift in response to the public outcry about the police response to the double murder.
Haters gonna hate.
Yes, and it was ironic because Taylor Swift had just performed 4 concerts in Sydney, and so I think it was a topical reference. Though this is the problem: the police are damned if they do, damned if they don't. So basically, one of the alleged misgivings of the investigation was that the police didn't say much to the media while the manhunt was still going on. And to me, as a Victorian resident, I have no dog in the fight, I think you've got to let police do their job, you know, within reasonable boundaries. Like, you don't want the you have a guy on the run who knows how police operate. So going to the media and saying everything, you know, everything about the case is kind of just going to, make things a little bit harder.
It's actually going to prejudice the case anyway. That's the thing. That's why
they could be unwittingly assisting the offender.
Yes. Exactly. I was actually talking to Adrian about this last night because we were watching that program about the Bates versus the post office. And this whole thing of outing suspected criminals in the media. So you have this trial by media before they're even brought to trial, before there's even really an understanding of what's happened, it completely prejudices the case against people. And you have, sometimes innocent people are then being hounded by the media for something that they haven't necessarily done.
It's are you familiar with the McAlpine libel case from the UK, where 10 or 15 years ago now, they were going through the big Jimmy Savile scandal, and the wife of the Speaker of the House of Commons, Sally Berko, sent out a tweet that said, "Why has Lord McAlpine been named in this shocked face?" And that was deemed to be a libelous statement because she was prejudicing a future trial if one was to have occurred and no charges were brought, which means that sometimes when there are libelous statements out there, people don't realise what they're actually saying, particularly when it comes to the age of social media. It's like recently, I can't remember which jurisdiction it is, but there's a case where someone has been done for allegedly abducting a Jewish gentleman. Then now there's a load of redactions that are required by this new court order where previously it wasn't in place. So things were reported that now can't be reported. So when they show those newspaper headlines, they have to redact what was legal then, but not legal now.
There is also one other aspect of this case as well, which I'll let me put it up on this screen here. So after it came out that a serving policeman had killed two gay people, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras organisers banned police. Well, firstly, they banned police outright. Then they said, okay, police can come, but you can't march in uniform.
But here's the thing that always gets me is why do people want to march in uniform at these events? Would you have a surgeon walk down there in scrubs? Would you have nurses in scrubs? Firemen in fire suits? Would you do it? Probably not. So why are you having cops marching up and down in uniforms other than to go, look how wonderful police officers are? I don't understand why anybody in this day and age would march up and down in their
They're representing the force, Thieves. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, you represent the force, you wear the uniform.
Here's the thing, though. Why? It's a job. Are you on duty here? If you're on duty and you're working, wear the uniform. If you're off duty and you're not working, don't wear the uniform.
Ironically, it was started as an exercise to break down prejudice and bias, you know. It was that, we're visible, we're gay police officers, we're visible, we're not here to arrest you, yada, yada, yada. You know, it was a community policing thing. And they're actively recruiting, you know, people who identified as LGBTQI+ in the police force. There was actually active recruitment going on along with people who identified as Aboriginal or were from diverse backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So it was a way to make the police force more diverse and had less stigma, I guess, associated with it.
As a community outreach thing, I think it's a good idea for the police to march in uniform, you know, especially if...
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Okay, you clearly don't. However, like, and call me a curmudgeon here, but if I was Karen Webb and the Mardi Gras organisers, like, and you in good faith, you know, allow your police officers, and you can see on the picture on the screen here, you sometimes march yourself. You know, if the Mardi Gras organisers said to me, your people are not allowed to march because of their job, because of their association with you, I would say to the Mardi Gras organisers, okay, we will not send anyone. We won't provide security either. What happens, happens. It's on your head.
No, I think that's self-defeating. I understand the motivations here because there was high feeling against the fact that this gentleman, well, not gentleman, but, you know, person who was alleged to have caused these crimes and he hasn't been brought to trial, so, you know, he hasn't been proven guilty, that he was a police officer and that was the perception, was that it was framed because he's a cop, therefore that somehow tarnishes the rest.
So imagine if Karen Webb said to all the gay cops, no, you guys are murderers, you know, get out. Because of your sexuality, get out.
I mean, it's basically what happens to this whole debate about if one person in an organisation who identifies a certain way causes a crime or is, mm-hmm. you know, instigator in a crime, somehow that tarnishes the rest of the people that identify that way in that organisation. It's blatantly false. You know, it's just when you reframe this, it sounds like it was a crime of passion. Like this guy obviously was obsessed by his former partner and was upset that he had a new partner. This is what happened. Now, really, if he wasn't a cop, none of this would be an issue. It just happened to be a cop because police officers and other people in those respective professions, including nursing and doctors and things like that, are seen to have a higher level of integrity. So when they do something like this, then it seems to be worse.
Yeah, if that makes sense. I hear what you're saying, Clancy, and it reminds me of the Sarah Everard case in the UK.
I know.
A serving police officer raped and murdered a 34-year-old woman in London. And the response of the police was about as tone deaf as you could get. So there it was during COVID restrictions that this occurred, and there was a protest march and a vigil that was held that was originally banned by the police because they said it breached COVID rules when everyone turned up wearing face masks, they were all socially distanced, etc. And it still went ahead. And then you had police officers wrestling people to the ground. And you've got the famous photograph of the female protester in the face mask staring at a camera with three burly police officers physically picking her up to arrest her. And I think that the police themselves have a bigger issue here. Police themselves have forgotten what their core purpose is. Upholding the law. And I think that the problem is that police reputations are no longer that police are on the side of the communities and that they're just out to do whatever they want in some cases. I mean, particularly living in this part of America where I do, where there's a high African-American population, there are definitely areas of the greater metropolitan area that I live where the police are unwelcome. And as a member of the LGBTQ community, the police are generally speaking unwelcome because it is not necessarily that the police have an individual who happens to be a member of a certain community in them, therefore it's fine, or that person does something. It's that time and time and time again, police investigate based on stereotypes, based on prejudice, and investigating badly. Whether that be intentional or unintentional, it doesn't matter. So in the US, we have the George Floyd case, where a serving police officer murdered a man. In the UK, we have the cases of the raids of the gay nightclubs with the drag queens in the 1970s and 80s, where famously Paul O'Grady, if you are aware of who he was, aka Lily Savage, was arrested simply for being a drag act and being gay. Yep. So there is a long stigma here, and I think that it is tone deaf of the police to expect that they will be welcomed at these events.
Well, considering that they'd marched in the Sydney Mardi Gras for at least 20 years, for the Mardi Gras organisers to say, go away, because of something one of your members did.
I do think that that is a bit of an overreaction on the side of the organisers, but I do think that as gay rights has expanded to be more than just gay rights, and now it includes sexual orientation, which is more than just same-sex attraction. It includes gender identity, and it includes things like intersex conditions. The more minority community, so the bisexual community, the trans community, and so on, have had far greater disproportionate levels of negative police interaction.
Yeah.
So whilst interactions with what is the normative LGBT community, so your white, gay, same-sex attracted individuals, they will have had far less negative interactions than, say, a trans bisexual.
Yeah.
But I think the police need to be aware of this at these events, because whilst they may have made strides with some of the old guard at these events, there is a lot of younger people who are far less accepting of the police in general in the LGBT plus community, because they see far more police abuses, because social media allows them to be more well known.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, it's a sad state, but I'm glad the police got to march, and hopefully the wheels of justice will turn quickly on this murder case, and you know, hopefully the guy pleads guilty or gets a fair trial in the least. Speaking of bad deeds, it was also revealed in the last couple of weeks that the boss of ASIO revealed that an Australian politician was essentially in the pockets of an intelligence network from overseas. Now, they haven't named the politician. They haven't said which jurisdiction the politician worked in, just that
or even if they're still a serving politician.
Well, it's saying former politician.
Okay, well, in that case, all right, so you're all right. Yeah,
former politician. They may be saying, but he may be a former politician, but that doesn't mean he's still not serving in some capacity in a party.
True. That's a good point.
Tony Abbott.
Excuse me. I would like to say on the record here, before we get sued by Tony Abbott, there is no evidence to suggest that any member of any political party is implicated in this, including the former member of Warringah, Tony Abbott.
Clancy is allowed to have her suspicions.
I'm just having my opinion. I have no evidence.
I understand that. But okay. Disclaimers like that, because it just covers our backside.
My money would be on Sam Dastyari.
If you
remember Shanghai Sam.
Yeah, I don't know.
With Tony Abbott, he could very easily have been in the pocket of the British government.
Yeah, yes. I'd say British. However, it's turned out that the A team from overseas was actually Chinese. That they did actually reveal it was Chinese.
It's like when they finally revealed the Soviet spy inside ASIO. That was.
Oh yeah. Yes.
But the thing that gets me here, though, is that what can ASIO actually do to an individual like this? What can they actually do?
But I suppose make it known. I think that's probably the first part, is make it known.
Yeah.
So we know that for all the talk about, you know, oh, we can't say bad things about the Chinese. It's xenophobic. You know, it's just racism. Actually, we'll talk about racism in a second. You know, we have to identify the threat as well. This isn't to say that any Chinese person on the street is, you know, likely to be Chinese.
A spy.
As Clancy has met my wife, and my wife is identifiably Chinese. I'd be very surprised if my wife was involved in intelligence activities, you know,
It's like people who are racist against individuals who are Polish, because, you know, it's a former Eastern Bloc country, therefore they're all sympathetic to Russia. My wife is identifiably, clearly of Polish extraction.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be racist.
It was a bit like World War II when America had the Japanese internment camps.
And Britain had internment camps of Germans and Italians on the Isle of Man.
Really interesting.
They turned the Isle of Man into an internment camp.
Back in the 50s and 40s and 50s, you know, we got people off the streets and ripped them out of their homes on the basis of their perceived, you know, nationality, even though the people may have been born in America or Britain or whatever.
Yeah. So, One of the most famous people who was interred was George Takei.
Yes. If you've seen The Terror Infamy, you'll actually get like a bit of a backstory to it. But yeah, we do know that foreign actors are working to disrupt Australian civics or extract intellectual property or like just hack stuff in general. So I don't think it's a bad thing to say that, you know, foreign agents are working.
Work.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we probably do need to. So Mike Burgess, who was head of ASIO, has been under pressure to name the individual, and I think he eventually will, though once the heat's died down. But I think he has to. Like the cat's out of the bag. Let's be frank and upfront, because if you hide details,
just going to create suspicion.
Correct.
And that's bad for everybody.
Oh, speaking of Mr. Potato Head. The Dunkley by-election. The Dunkley by-election in Victoria. So Dunkley is an electorate in around the Frankston area. Frankston was a very working class Melbourne suburb in the southeast Melbourne suburbs. It's become gentrified, and now there are like million dollar properties, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, they had a by-election. because their sitting member passed away last year. And this by-election was seen as a litmus test for Anthony Albanese because, you know, cost of living, the NZYQ immigration crisis, all this kind of stuff. So there was a lot of attention being paid to Dunkley. And in the end, Jody Baillie for the Labour Party won by almost 5,000 votes.
Yeah, it was an easy win.
3.6% swing to the Liberals, which isn't insignificant.
But that 3.6% swing and the percentages that you have here, so at the 2022 election, there was a 3.6% swing from Liberal to Labour, and the 3.6% swing back just means that the results here were identical almost to the results in 2019. So,
But there is a shift.
Hasn't made any ground since Scott Morrison in that seat. He's just reversed the Albanese gains.
Yeah, well, look, I think that's a start. If there was a swing to Labour, I think that would be shitting his pants.
It would be curtains for him.
However, Albanese is retained and life goes on, and hopefully Jody Baillie will serve the people of Dunkley with all her all her energy and integrity.
Reserve them to the best of her abilities.
Correct. However, during the campaign, the NZYQ High Court decision made the news because this lovely person on the left, Susan Lee, however you want to pronounce it. So what had happened was that Victoria Police had arrested a particular person of Papua New Guinean descent on the suspicion that an assault had occurred in an inner city Melbourne suburb, and this particular PNG person had a tracking bracelet because he was one of these detainees released in the NZYQ decision, and his tracking bracelet put him in the area at the time of the assault. However,
doesn't mean he did it.
Yeah, correct. So it turns out that he didn't do it. They actually reviewed the security camera footage around all that kind of stuff, and they let this person go. The Victoria Police came out and said, look, we made a mistake. We've let this person go, et cetera, et cetera. But that didn't stop Susan Lee from opening her big Twitter mouth. And what she said was, if you live in Frankston and you've got a problem with Victorian women being assaulted by foreign criminals, vote against Labour. If you do not want to see Australian women assaulted by foreign criminals, vote against Labour. It was literally what she tweeted after news of the arrest, but before the news of the wrongful arrest had come out.
What a wonderful human being she sounds like.
So it's a bit of a, like, we will get into racism proper shortly. But interesting that Susan Lee would have, like, I have a problem with women being assaulted. I have a problem with Victorian women being assaulted, and not just by foreign criminals. You know,
I have a problem with it, full stop.
Full stop. But though, having said that, the Liberal Party have always been the party of stronger borders and Australian border force.
Disagree with that. They've always been the party of scaremongering over borders.
Tony did stop the boats. You have to give him that. He did stop the boats.
He stopped them from being known about. Stop because he was the bloke who said media blackouts.
No,
he didn't really stop the boats. He just stopped them being obvious. He just sent them back to where they were and spent lots more money.
The problem is that politics has always been grubby, and
this was disgusting.
I think there could have been a better way to put it. And look, it didn't really work in the end. It either didn't work or it completely backfired, depending on your point of view.
This is true. Just going back to the boat thing, the issue's always been that they really needed to work out a plan where they could stop people coming to Australia without a visa. I'm not going to use illegally because it's actually not true that they were coming here illegally. It is illegal to seek asylum.
Mm-hmm.
But they needed to work out a way where they could seek asylum in such a way that they didn't actually have to come to Australia to do that without a visa in their country of origin. And that was always the issue, is that they didn't have any sort of facility where they could rock up in these countries, not all countries, but in these particular countries that we're talking about, where they could rock up to the consulate or the, you know, wherever it was and say, I am a political refugee or I am being persecuted from XYZ. I need to seek asylum in Australia. How do I get there and seek protection?
And for some of these people, as we discussed on a previous episode, Australia is the first safe country they will get to.
Absolutely, yeah. And this idea too that they can hopscotch through other countries, the reason they hopscotch through other countries is because they can't actually seek asylum in those countries for whatever reason.
Yeah, some countries won't accept refugees. China does not accept refugees, full stop.
Yes.
Doesn't have refugees, won't accept refugees. If you are fleeing religious persecution because you have converted from Islam to Christianity, most of the Indian subcontinent is out. So Pakistan is out, Bangladesh is out, India is out. Indonesia is out. The Philippines are out.
That was going to be my next point, is that, you know, there's no point in fleeing persecution from one, you know, Muslim-run country to go to another Muslim-run country where you're probably going to get worse persecution because you're also not from that country, so you're going to be stigmatised as well.
You're not going to be stigmatised in Australia.
We're not going to behead you for being gay or stone you to death for adultery.
We're not going to kill you for being an apostate.
Yes.
No. So anyway,
we're just going to lock you up in, you know, in for an indeterminate number of years.
And we may send you to a small island called Nauru.
Yes, true. It's a tropical island. Come on. It's lovely weather all year round. Hey, Phoebe, would you like to hear about an octogenarian who is seeking election?
Okay. Let's hear about an octogenarian who's seeking election.
Darren Hinch, former radio personality and politician Darren Hinch, announces that he is going to run for Melbourne Mayor in October when the Melbourne mayoral election happens.
Well, as in the former guy who ran his own political party.
Correct. Yeah. Darren Hinch, the former senator, former radio broadcast person. He's former TV current affairs host.
Darren Hinch's Justice Party.
Correct.
Which last year he dissolved.
Yes, which he dissolved. So he has made up his mind. He's 80 years old. He's been in journalism for 63 years. Mr. Hinch
told me he's running for the Injustice Party.
Possibly, you never know. Mr. Hinch told the Herald Sun he sought to get the city back on its feet and fix problems with the city's woke council. He told 3AW that he was planning to run with the slogan, "Make Melbourne Magnificent."
Oh, Jesus.
All I'd say to Darren Hinch is, whenever anybody says that he's going to be going up against woke culture, he's got a problem. Because that means that he doesn't actually have any idea what the actual issues in an area are.
I disagree, Phoebes. I do understand that you have a problem with the term woke. And
term woke here and it being used here is that it is so broad, so undefined, and can be used to go up against anything that is seen to be progressive right-wing.
Okay, but so is the word bogan. There is no one standard definition of the word bogan.
I would agree with that. And anybody who says they're going against bogans is also an idiot. It's also calling somebody a hoon is also idiotic.
You could translate that to there's no proper definition of the word liberal. I mean, we have a liberal party who's anything but liberal.
Sky News. There is nothing about the sky in Sky News. They're always on the ground.
Also, there's nothing about the news in Sky News.
Oh, no, I think they've got their head in the clouds most of the time. They're not very grounded.
There we go. However, I actually, as a Melbourne resident, I do actually kind of get where he's coming from. I used to go to the city of Melbourne a lot for work, and since Sally Capp has been the Lord Mayor, it has been a lot harder to get around. So one of the most controversial things that Sally Capp did was remove on-street parking and make it all bike lanes.
But that's not woke. That's what public transport
is green. Is green woke? Is green woke? But the problem with that is it's made
harder. There's no such thing as green woke. It's just called environmentalism.
Well, you can have someone who's a woke greenie, but the problem,
installing bike lanes is not woke. What are we going to call Boris Johnson woke because he expanded bike lanes in London to their highest level ever?
There's an idea. But it was seen as but she did it in the name of environmentalism. That was the thing. And my problem with that is, so as a person who used to run a service business years ago, was that I used to have a lot of clients in the city, and trying to get parking in the city, trying to drive through the city, trying to get parking to the city, especially when you have like cases full of tools and like, you know, big boxes full of service parts and all that kind of stuff. You can't take a tram into the city with, you know, thousands of dollars of equipment.
It's like, how does a roofer get his supplies in there?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Sally Cat made that really hard as well. And it's like, well, you know, I kind of haven't forgiven her for that. But then also just some other things as well. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Woke.
Well,
it's not woke to install bus lanes. It's not woke to change bus.
It is when you're aware of how inconvenient it'll be and
but
how much worse
not
you'll
wokeism.
Make.
No,
that's not
just
woke.
Being a tit.
That's sorry?
Just inconveniencing
no,
people.
That's
not
the
woke.
Opposite of woke.
What do you mean?
The whole concept of woke is that you're empathetic to people. Like, seriously, I don't understand how people get the opposite. You know, being woke is a good thing. Woke is just being a decent freaking person.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Here's a question for you. If there was a large investment in art galleries, museums, and restoring historic buildings, would that be woke?
No, I wouldn't.
But I know a number of people that would say that would be woke because you're giving into arty-fartsy liberal causes.
Okay. But if you're doing it in the name of identity politics, then that's where it becomes woke.
Well, that's a whole... But no, it's a whole different concept. Look, if you had a infrastructure program, right, and you installed bike lanes and ferries and trains... And a whole
trams
host of other
and maybe
other
a gondola system round or a...
Theoretically, just say Hobart, okay, where there's a definite need for this stuff. And it was being asked for from all levels of the population. So I'm not just talking about the poor and disenfranchised and, you know, students and yada, 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 but literally everybody.
Yep.
Would that be woke?
No, because it is asked for by the people, and if there's a proper consultative process, I'm fine with that. If a person unilaterally makes the
business planning,
if a person unilaterally makes a decision and does things without proper consultation under the guise of, look, we have to be more environmentally friendly, we need to do this, and I'm going to do it while the state is in lockdown.
Let me stop you there. That's not woke. That's tokenism.
Tokenism, not woke.
But they're kind of tied. Okay.
No, tokenism and woke are two completely different platforms.
Tokenism is
when you do things because you want to get a vote from a certain segment of the population.
And it's like when you have a photograph of a business of their diversity and they've got like, we are a diverse company, and they've got like one woman and one non-white person, and look, we're diverse. That's tokenism.
Yeah.
Okay, look,
But Darren Hinch coming out on a platform that says he's anti-woke tells me that he is out of touch with reality, doesn't really know what's going on, and is part of the generation.
Let's get Darren Hinch on to explain his position. And
Darren Hinch, you are welcome as a guest on this show anytime.
Yes.
Send us an email. Phone one of us.
Have your people call our people.
You can even come
people.
To my basement in Michigan, and I will interview you.
Or you can,
man,
you can go
that
to...
doesn't sound kinky at all.
The basement
come
of transgender lights.
From in Michigan, and I'll interview you.
Come to my basement. I will whip you up. Oh boy.
I'm just waiting for the camera to pan to the
whips and chains.
The
look, speaking of someone who might like whips and chains for all we know, Rupert Murdoch.
He's
engaged again. Yay!
Yes, but engaged in what?
In the idea of marriage. So he turns 93. But he plans to marry a 67-year-old Russian-born retired scientist who is the ex-wife of Alexander Zhukov.
Okay. Okay.
Whose daughter was the ex-wife of Roman Abramovich, who used to own Chelsea. So there you go.
Oh, you mean the football club?
The football, no, not the, yes, the football club. The soccer club. Get it right. Get
well,
it right.
That the Association is football.
Football Club.
Association Football.
It is football in the UK, I do believe. Isn't that right?
And none of us are in the UK, so ba-ba.
That's well, why I said it's Association Football.
He owned it in the UK, which means it was the football club.
Okay. So anyway, so this will potentially be his fifth time down the aisle. So we were discussing this before we started recording. So he started off with Patricia Booker, and that marriage lasted 9 years. So 56
to 67. Does that make him a serial monogamist?
It does. That's a good. Well, actually, we don't know if he's. We can't assume because we thought Vince McMahon was monogamous as well, and it turns out that's not quite true.
All I would say is that Zsa Zsa Gabor eat your heart out.
Yes. I do find it interesting that during the gay marriage debate, you know, we're all talking about protecting marriage and the sanctity of marriage. And then you have like Zsa Zsa Gabor and Elizabeth Taylor and Rupert Murdoch and all that, just like, you know, changing partners like you change underwear.
Well, you know, hypocrisy is the heart of any good
white culture. Yeah. So Anna Murdoch from 67 to 99. So that was 22 years there. He got a good run out of that. Was a good run. Probably the most famous was Wendy Deng, who married in 99, and that went for 14 years to 2013. And Phoebe, you're saying that there was a pie to the face that Wendy Deng delivered.
Something along those lines. Or is it someone attacked?
No, someone tried to pie to her.
So somebody in the UK Parliament, when they had the phone hacking scandal and Rupert Murdoch was giving evidence in front of the Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee, so I think either someone tried to attack him or someone tried to pie him in the face, and Wendy Deng leaned over before the person could get there and whacked him in the face or shoved the pie in his face or something like that.
Mm-hmm. She took the pie for him.
Something like that.
Okay.
Sure, that's probably why they were married for such a long time.
For 14 years isn't too bad. Then Jerry Hall from 2016 to 2022. Then last year he was engaged last year to Anne Leslie Smith, and now he's engaged to Elena Jakova, and we'll see how that goes.
All I can say is that he's going for smarter women, because isn't this one a scientist or something?
Yeah, that's a retired scientist.
Something along those lines.
So, but now let's get serious one more time, and I think this is a meaty topic. So it came out this week that Sam Kerr, Matilda's captain Sam Kerr, was charged by the Twickenham police for using for the alleged racially aggravated harassment of a police officer.
So Twickenham is in Greater London. It's quite a wealthy suburb of Greater London. If you are a rugby fan, you will know Twickenham, because that's where England repeatedly defeat opponents in the game of rugby union, such as Australia, New Zealand, etc. They regularly defeat them there. And if you...
Yep.
Yeah, just like on the recording today, England beat the Republic of Ireland at Twickenham today. So, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. So Twickenham, a lot happens in Twickenham. So yes,
she's not due to go on trial until next year.
So let's break down the story. So on January the 30th, 2023, so this was over a year ago, Sam Kerr had been partying, got a little bit tipsy, got into a taxi, vomited in the taxi. There was a dispute over the fare, especially with regards to cleanup costs. The taxi driver went to the police station. The police came out, and it is alleged that Sam Kerr said to the police officer, "You stupid white bastard." And this year it was revealed that Sam Kerr had actually been charged with racially aggravated harassment of a police officer. And now it seems that lots of people are now defending racism. Like, I don't know. It's just really weird, you know. All it takes is a certain Anglo-Indian Australian footballer to get drunk and, you know, be abusive towards a police officer for us to now suddenly defend racism. You know, I guess it's
this idea of reverse racism, isn't it?
Which I think is a crock of shit, to be honest.
Here's what I would say, though. British law is very clear. British law is very clear that racism affects any race. Anybody who makes derogatory, inflammatory, insulting, or offensive comments based on race is guilty of a racially aggravated offence. I'm not saying that that's the case here, but I'm just saying that that's what the law itself says under the Public Order Act of 1984.
Yeah. You sound like you've been charged with that to know that quite well.
I studied that quite extensively at law school.
Okay, all right. Because there have been numerous people who have come out and said, look, Sam Kerr is a wonderful Australian. She's a high-achieving Australian. You know, this is... It must have been a misunderstanding. It must have, you know, it's... You know, yeah. So I just find it interesting that being a good sports person kind of absolves you of guilt over.
I mean, look at Mike Tyson. He's allowed to travel the world even though he's got convictions for domestic assault.
Yes. Well, I was going to say there's another famous Australian. There's another famous world changing Australian who committed some crimes in England, but whose reputation didn't get to absolve him of guilt. And I'm talking of none other than Rolf Harris. Rolf Harris was fucking knighted by the Queen, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he wasn't knighted. He was given an OBE.
Oh, okay, OBE. Sorry, my apologies. But, you know, he got a fucking OBE.
He was also given an Order of Australia.
Yes, yes. So why doesn't his reputation as a magnificent Australian, you know, absolve him of his guilt? I don't quite...
Because people don't particularly like to absolve paedophiles.
Well... Because in my understanding of racism, and I'm sorry if I get a little bit worked up about this, I find the hypocrisy of it all, you know, quite astounding, was that to me, and call me an old fart, but to me, racism is being prejudiced or making prejudiced remarks to someone, you know, with reference to their race, ethnicity, or culture. But now...
Which is effectively what UK law says.
Yes.
So anybody complaining that this is a misapplication of the law, if what was said is true, and I stress the if here,
yes,
Sam Kerr has the right to a fair trial, Sam Kerr is innocent until proven guilty,
Yep.
Then making references to somebody's race that they are, quote, a white bastard, is a racist comment under UK law.
Yes.
You may personally disagree with that, but that's what it says.
The question is not so much around whether or not that is racist, but whether or not that should be prosecuted.
Here's the thing. The
example I gave you guys when we were talking about this in the chat is that I was on a daily basis called a white C-U-N-T when I worked in an Aboriginal community. Now, I wasn't going to act on that. There was no point on me acting on that. Okay? And it happens. No. Let me finish my point. Because it happens on a daily basis when you work in public service in any area, but particularly in health. Okay? There is always going to be someone who is going to be calling you a name or insulting you on the basis of your race, sex, age, you know, level of education, whatever it happens to be. It's just one of the things that happens when you work in this sort of environment. We are not going to prosecute every time that happens. Having said that, when it's going to be that sort of abuse from, say, someone at your same level or above, then, yes, we probably will take that to task.
Yeah.
That's not to say we accept it, quite the opposite.
I think the point of this
was that because it was a police officer that she insulted and she's a high-profile athlete, then it's been made an example of.
Yeah,
I think the thing here, though, is that in the UK, under UK law, you have what's known as the public interest test. So before any prosecution is brought by the Crown Prosecution Service, it must pass what's known as the public interest test. So is prosecuting Sam Kerr in the public interest based on the evidence available in front of us?
And that I'm not so sure of.
And the public interest test will have gone something like this. Who is the person? What is their status in society at large? What are the circumstances around the incident occurring? And what are the circumstances of the victim? So, Sam Kerr is a non-white individual. That will have a bearing on this. Sam Kerr has
Phoebe, why? Why would Sam Kerr's race be a factor?
Because it can be more easily argued that using racial epithets against other individuals of your own racial group reduce the public interest in taking that to court.
Okay, so basically she was of a different ethnicity than the victim.
Yes.
So not necessarily because she is of a different ethnicity herself, just that she's of a different ethnicity to the victim.
So, for example, if you were to prosecute certain musical artists for the lyrics that they use in hip-hop, you would be there all day.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So that will have a bearing because she was a different ethnicity to the person that she was. Yeah.
And maybe artistic expression is also a different
field as well. It is, yes. That would have taken into account her status in public as well. She is a role model. Do we want, as part of the public, to be seen to be condoning this kind of behaviour?
Yeah.
And the answer will most likely have been quite a clear no.
No.
So the terminology that was used as well, it wasn't an incidental reference to race. The race was an integral part of the statement.
Yep.
So that will have a bearing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the status of the individual that it was being made against. I am shocked that it has been bought because police officers are generally held to be individuals who, when it comes to public order offences, they aren't
shrinking violence.
I don't mean to use this word incorrectly. They aren't capable of taking the offence in the same way that the ordinary person in the street would be.
Mm.
So, for example, if you had confronted Sam Kerr in the street and a police officer witnessed that and you were trying to get Sam Kerr to clean up your taxi and Sam Kerr called you a white bastard as the taxi owner, I would be more expecting of that to go to court than the police officer. Because swearing at police officers isn't a public order offence.
Making gestures
at police officers isn't a public order offence. So I'm quite surprised that this has gone where it is.
Yeah, I suppose the question is, did Sam Kerr offer to pay, like, you know, did she apologise? Did she clean up the taxi? Did she, you know, because, like, it's one thing to swear at an officer, but you damage someone else's property because you were
This is what I'm surprised at. She hasn't been charged with criminal damage.
Or maybe she has and the police haven't finally... No. The police
They would have told you that she had been charged with criminal damage.
Because
she's only been charged with racism.
Yeah, but she didn't tell, if you look on the screen here, that Football Australia were not informed of the charges. They found out through the media as well. It's like, well, good going, guys.
Because it's a public hearing, so it would have been at Twickenham Magistrates Court. And Twickenham Magistrates Court, when you turn up at Twickenham Magistrates Court, the police, there will be a local press reporter there that will write down every single
detail
of every case. It's like Brighton Magistrates Court, where I was, every day I'd walk past it. Every day there'd be a reporter out there from the local newspaper waiting to go in to sit in the public gallery, and their job was to literally just follow every case, write down the name, age, charges, and everything.
Yeah.
And the outcome of the case. But and they would publish that regardless.
Not fair. But she
probably hoped it was going to go away.
Well, we need the media to report on these things because we do need to know kind of what's going on. It's one of those, That's why they were town priors.
Shame that won't be happening in New Zealand very soon.
No, we will get. Hopefully, we'll get into that. But what astounds me is the hypocrisy of what Parnell might call the chattering classes. Is that I know. So what we've got now, so my definition of racism is, you know, prejudice or malice or intended offense towards someone with regards to the race, ethnicity or culture. But we seem to have this academic milieu where racism is now defined as power structures.
Yeah.
So it can be. Well, no, it's not just can be. It's according to Craig Foster here. So Craig Foster, I've if Craig Foster wants to sue me for defamation, please, get lawyers at 20 paces. But he's kind of, so when the Sam Kerr saga came out, he was going, Sam Kerr should be sacked as the captain of the Australian football team. But now he's offered a lengthy statement, a 180 degree change of position, saying he's mistaken in thinking any discriminatory, demeaning or hostile comments referencing any color were a form of racism. It's like, here we go. Like many, I mistakenly thought that comments that references any color and were discriminatory, demeaning or hostile were a form of racism. I apologize to Sam for that mistake. Well, okay, citing
they
the
are
diverse
in this case. So what? The thing that you've got to understand in British law, and particularly in Britain, racism based on being of a white ethnicity is quite prevalent in some communities, because we have a large Irish traveller community which experiences a lot of racism in Britain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. So
and that needs to be taken into consideration in this whole discussion as well.
Let me just finish with this paragraph here. Citing the Diversity Council of Australia's definition of racism, which references the perpetrator being in a position of race-based societal power, Foster said racism cannot be committed against a white person as they are not a member of a marginalised group. Does that equate to double standards when the same terms of phrases are used against marginalized groups is the question, Foster wrote. The answer is no, because the power differential and therefore impact are vastly and fundamentally different. Craig Foster.
Tell an Irish traveller that.
Craig Foster, you are a fucking idiot.
Tell an Irish traveller that.
Actually,
that's all I will say is tell an Irish traveller that.
Yep.
Tell
a white person in Japan that,
Yeah, tell a Jewish person that.
This is the point. This is what he's actually saying. You're completely taking this the wrong way. He's talking about the minority group in that space. So a white person in Japan is a minority group. A traveller in the UK is a minority group. It is not to do with their colour.
But the travellers are majority white.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. So if you're in a majority white society, such as Australia, and you make a comment to someone of that majority, that's the power differential is different.
But I thought white people rule the world. I thought white, white people were responsible for it.
The issue with that definition there is Britain is a majority white country.
Yeah.
Britain has white on white racism.
Yes. Yes.
And it has white on white racism.
England has an Indian prime minister.
Yeah. Well, this Britain has white on white racism.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we're not just talking about a colour. But that's the problem.
Problem with this definition.
Yes. So talking about a cultural group. So you were talking about the travellers. Yes, they have a lot of, racism against them. But that's not because they're white. It's because they belong to a particular group.
But Britain also engages in classism, which is upper-class white people discriminating against working-class white people.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
But that's exactly. Not racism in itself. That's just discrimination. But, to say that you can't be racist towards white people, to say that you can't be racist towards white people because white people are in a position of power, I find that, completely, I find that is a definition of racism, but to say that is the only definition of racism that matters, I think that's fucking stupid. Because So if it's based on power, what way? So let's say, for example, Nicky Winmar. Are you ladies familiar with Nicky Winmar?
No.
No.
He was a St Kilda football player, and he has his famous photo is like he's standing, he's got his jersey up, and he's pointing to his stomach to reference his skin.
Now, his skin colour.
Yeah, so Nicky Winmar is a famous Indigenous football player, probably getting paid quite a lot of money. He's certainly in a high-profile position, and the people abusing him are, let's presumably say, they're white, blue-collar, you know, Anglo-Australian bogans. Who has the more power in that situation? Nicky Winmar as a professional athlete or the white, the blue-collar bogan behind in the seats?
It reminds me of the statement that somebody once said, who was the beneficiary of affirmative action? Michael Jordan or Larry Bird?
And what's the answer?
The anti-affirmative action answer is usually Larry Bird, because Larry Bird white.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. But are they not both equally talented? This is the thing, you know.
Yeah, this was the thing. Larry, the comments that have been made is Larry Bird only got somewhere in the world of professional basketball because he was white.
Okay. Whereas most of these superstars in the NBA are black,
not white.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, yeah. But let's say
this is the absurdity of it all. When we start going like down Adam these paths.
Sorry.
This is the absurdity of it all. When we start going down these paths and we start trying to define all of these things and we start trying to criminalize all of these things and we start trying to make society get hung up on all of these individual things, if someone's being an arsehole and a tit towards you, you need them to stop it. It doesn't matter where you are in society. If someone's being an arsehole, a tit, and a wanker towards you, offensive and intimidating towards you, that's unacceptable. Doesn't matter about your race, gender, sexual orientation.
It doesn't actually matter.
It doesn't make the crime any worse or any better because it's got that element to it. Were you a tit to this person? Were you offensive to this person? What were the circumstances of that? Not this one size fits all. It must be only in this to be offensive. Was Sam Kerr offensive? Yes or no? Is the only thing that should be at issue here.
And did she reference race? Yes, that's to me. So, for example, if I go to China and I do slanty eyes and, you know, buck tooth and hold chopsticks, is that racism?
Potentially.
Why? Well, if we define racism with regards to power structures, then no, because in China, the majority are, you know, majority are clearly Chinese.
Yeah, but you're mocking them.
It's a mockery.
But that's not racism. According to the DCA, that is not racism. Racism is to do with being in a position of race-based societal power.
Okay,
according to the DCA, I can go to China
by your argument, though, that the Afrikaans, the white Afrikaans in Africa weren't racist by putting in apartheid because they were in a minority.
Sorry, say it again.
So by that definition, the white Afrikaans in South Africa who instituted apartheid weren't being racist because they were actually in the minority.
I disagree. They were racist because they were deliberately targeting black people. That's what made them racist.
Issue with definition.
This is what I'm saying. They were in the minority. Definition. The power structure was different, though.
I agree. There was the racism was enforced through a power structure, but it's racism nonetheless. Like, for example, I forget who it was. Like when the Nazi groups that gate crashed let women speak. The Nazis are not in power in any way, shape, or form in Australia. But they're saying, you know, they have a very clear white Australia mindset. Are they racist? Because, well, are they being racist? Because they're not, they're Nazis and they're not in any position of power. They're just people giving their own opinion. Are they being racist when they talk about ending immigration and, you know, fucking Jewish women to make hybrid babies to clear out the Jewish race, all this kind of stuff?
I have absolutely no idea what you're trying to get at there.
I'm just trying to say that if you have opinions but don't have any power to exercise those opinions or to exercise your racism, by this DCA definition, no, you are not being racist because the Nazis don't have race-based societal power.
In my opinion,
well, they do.
To draw an end to this, in my opinion, racism is purely prejudice or discrimination based on somebody's race. Whether that includes power structures, whether that includes, you know, other characteristics, good on you. But you'll never get me to move off of the definition personally held that racism is discrimination or prejudice, either positive or negative, based on race. It doesn't matter whether it's white people on black people on Asian people, or white people on other white people. It doesn't matter to me.
I agree. Hear, 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 hear. That's... Now,
but
Phoebe,
then, of course, it brings up that's the distillation of that, which is the concept of white privilege, doesn't it?
That's a discussion for another day.
That's another day.
I'd agree with that.
Let's move across the Dutch. Phoebe.
Press play.
Do I have to?
Well, look, what I want to say on TVNZ is it's incredibly unsettling, and I do genuinely feel for the staff, and some of them will be today, because clearly all media companies here and around the world are a changing media environment. I didn't see the comments, but what I'd just say to you is that, you know, what I'd say to you is it is unsettling, and importantly, we recognise that it's a tough day for people from TVNZ.
So, Phoebe, what's happening with TVNZ?
So that is a proposal to slice 68 jobs from the national broadcaster of New Zealand 1 week after the main free-to-air television channel in New Zealand decided that it was going to be closing its entire news division. News Hub is slated to close on the 31st of July, 2024.
News Hub here is... All right, so...
So News Hub make the Sky News content for New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So Sky News Australia's content that is broadcast about New Zealand is made by News Hub. So they are the main commercial broadcaster on free-to-air television in New Zealand, and they have announced through their parent company... Discovery Time Warner, or Time Warner Discovery, whichever way around it is, that the entire news division is to be shuttered. Gone.
Yeah.
So and this is a very... Said, yeah. And sorry, I just noticed it wasn't the 31st of July, it's the 30th of June that this is planned to be going, so I do apologise for that. But this will have a major impact on what is free and open journalism in New Zealand, and democracy will suffer, in my opinion. And where one democratic country has this kind of failing of its independent news media, it can be used as a model in other countries where news media may not be doing quite as well as
it
potentially was, and the plurality of news media is diminishing. And the quality of journalism will suffer, not just in New Zealand, but across the wider Oceania, Asia Pacific region, I think.
Yeah, because like in where you are, Phoebe, you have a very large variety of media available. Yes, you have your Foxes and your CNNs.
5 million of us.
So you have this. You have a very large market full of all ranges of opinions. Yeah.
And then everything that's okay. From one American news network on one side to the Young Turks on the other side to MSNBC, Fox News, Fox, to ABC, CBS in the middle.
to InfoWars as well, if you want to go that far. Whereas in Australia, the problem is, and like in these really small markets, you only have, like, you know, we only have ABC, 10, 7, 9, SBS, and a handful of other, you know, like the New Daily, The Age. Yeah, you know, we've only got
recently, Nine did announce cuts to its current affairs output. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Because the problem is that you have to pay people to do a job, but the problem is that sometimes you need those trashy headlines to generate interest, to get eyeballs, to drive marketing revenue.
And what it does lead me to wonder is, will Australian news coverage include New Zealand stories? Because New Zealand's going to be pinching Australia's news and running that.
Well, they've already pinched. They've already pinched the project.
Well, there you go. But yeah, and Sky News Australia relies on News Hub for its New Zealand content, which was brought up as a faux pas in the New Zealand Parliament when the communications minister said, "Well, people can just switch to Sky News as an alternative."
Yay. Hey, Phoebe,
and it was pointed out who makes Sky News.
Phoebe, can you stop there for a second? I see this lovely waggly tail behind Clancy's right shoulder.
Oh, hello. Who's that? That's Isabel.
Ah, the other cute, the other doggo of Let's Save the Governor General.
Isabel, come here.
This doggo, the Governor General.
Yeah. That's with George. She's carrying George in her mouth, and here's Jasper's coming back to say hello. And Diablo is somewhere around downstairs.
Okay. Does he ever come upstairs?
Yeah, no, he does. It's just that he's got bad arthritis in his hip, so he doesn't navigate the stairs as well as he used to. Then we've got the two cats floating around somewhere.
Floating around, just as cats do.
Well,
as cats
so do. There's Adrian. Adrian's cat Polly's moved in with us about a month ago, and she's quite elderly. She's 13. She's having a few hip problems at the moment, so we have to take her to the vet. And then my cat Imriel, who you met when you were here, he's hiding from 13-year-old Polly, who has no teeth. But I think he's just a bit pissed off with his house being taken over by other animals, which is going to be compounded because when we return from Adelaide in April, the two ginger cats will be moving in with us as well.
Wow, you have the
menagerie.
We will have a menagerie. We did have all of the animals in the bedroom with us the other day. So we had cat and three dogs and my cat sitting apart, but all two cats and three dogs in total. So we'll be having four cats and three dogs. Adrian and I have decided we need to buy ourselves a king-size bed.
Yeah.
And just for the animals, not for yourselves.
Just for the animals, yeah.
fair enough. Well, look, It is interesting. The media landscape, that's why I have an Age subscription, because I like what the Age put out and I do want to support that kind of journalism. I'm not a big fan of the Herald Sun's kind of tabloid focused journalism, but
I'd agree with that. I think the Age is definitely a lot more balanced, especially these days.
Yes, indeed. I used to
be a subscriber to the Sydney Morning Herald. 10 or more years ago, but they've gotten steadily more and more right wing with, you know, a certain person managing.
Towards your taste.
Yes.
Well, the Daily Telegraph's bloody awful, and that always has been.
The telly.
I'm mostly subscribed to ABC Online. So that's where I get most of my news.
Okay. And look, having said that, I actually watch ABC when I'm at work. I have the ABC News on the telly, you know, which I'll pop up and catch the headlines as I'm working.
Well, I only watch ABC on television. I don't actually watch any of the other free-to-air commercial televisions stations, and I only listen to ABC Radio or Hobart FM, which is the local radio program that Adrian listens to for comedic value because they're hilarious.
Intentionally or unintentionally?
Unintentionally.
Ah, okay. All right.
Especially when they're having Irish Hour or something like that on. We're actually thinking about putting together a proposal to get our own slot on community about FM.
Well, that I would love to. I'd love to be part. Yeah, very, very interesting. Let's end on Wendy Deng protecting Rupert Murdoch from a pie.
Can you just tell me whether or not the Taylor government included a confidentiality clause, and maybe the other supplement did not?
The sitting is suspended for 10 minutes.
Here we go. Here's a slow-mo replay.
So was she Wendy'd?
That is a good, you know, face across the hand. That is odd.
All I would say is that the Western Australian should have been worried Austrian Theory would do that kind of clothesline.
Yeah. Oh, and we're back to pro wrestling. This is
pro wrestling.
Oh boy. Anyway, ladies, what have we got on for the rest of the day? Whatever's left of it.
I'm going to the Taste of the Huon Festival.
Whoa, la-di-da. Yep.
La-di-da. I'm gonna get some oysters.
I'm going to the cinema tonight to watch Dune Part 2.
Ooh,
wow. Oh, yes. Do tell me how you enjoy it. I'm planning to go see that probably next week sometime.
I've heard it's very good.
Well, and me, I've got a daughter to drop off at work very shortly. So I will love yous and I will leave yous. But until next time, there's a certain political figure in Australia who always needs saving, and God damn it, it's our job to do it. The Governor General.
In history's page, let every stage advance Australia fair. Australia.